I mean,
are we live?
Yeah, we're out. Yeah, we're live. Yeah, this is
this is live.
Yeah.
Oh, there was no 3-2-1 action. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. We're going.
Let's go.
All right. What's up, everyone? We are Not So Live on Real Estate, your source for all things real estate and mortgage related. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
Good morning.
Good. We've got it's the Paul and Sal show. Paul Paslagas, Sal Cusmano. Here's looking dapper as usual. We've got two special guests. One not so special, Max Nathan, the man with two first names. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Max is a loan officer here at Hall Financial. Very good loan officer. Good looking kid. Plays golf real well. We also have a very special guest, Alan J. Robinson. Works for Century 21 Town and Country. He's a real estate agent. He's been in the industry for 5 years, but really kind of hit it over the last 2 years full time, seen a lot of success, building a really good name for himself. So we figured let's have him on the show. He'll tell us a little bit about what he does and talk to us about a few topics, a few things that he's going to bring up. It's probably what you want to talk about is first time home buyers, and also a little bit about the inspection period, what you should and should not try to negotiate in that period of time. How are you, Alan?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Thank you guys for having me.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Fantastic. So we've got some more topics that we're going to talk about today. We've got a lot more homeowners are in a survey are saying it's a good time to sell. We're going to talk a little bit about the Equifax data breach, which is kind of concerning.
Scary stuff.
Yeah. And then we've got home prices are sky high, but mortgages are still cheap. Right?
Cheap as I've ever been.
All right. So let's start with Alan. Alan, tell us a little bit, you know, what you think about first-time home buyers and what houses they should be going after, right? I mean, a lot of first-time home buyers are now, a lot of millennials looking at houses, a lot of people are don't know where to start. So what do you suggest? I mean, what do you say to a first-time home buyer that says, hey, I want to buy a house? Where do you start with them?
You know, first-time home buyers usually kind of have an idea, okay, where they want to buy, kind of what they're looking for. They watch HGTV, they're spending time on Zillow. And what I'm about to say kind of goes with not only first-time home buyers, but second-time home buyers and third-time home buyers, but more specifically, first-time home buyers. And, you know, I go to several houses with them because they're educating themselves on what they want, they have ideas, and they're turning this imagination of homeownership into a reality.
Yeah, okay? That's a big deal.
It is. So, and I take it very seriously. And one of my favorite things I like to tell first-time home buyers is an 80% rule.
Okay. Figuratively. That's interesting. What does that mean?
So, we are never going to find a house that 100% gets you going. Oh my God, this is the one.
Right, no, right. You're not going to hit all the check boxes, right?
No, there's no perfect house the first time.
Yeah. No.
There's not.
So like your first girlfriend or boy, it just doesn't work. Yeah.
Or any friends.
Yeah, you.
You mean,
no, you're not 100%.
I'm not special.
Oh, man.
Nobody has a high school sweetheart here?
Oh, I had one. She was not 100%, though.
She ran away?
Actually, well, she moved to New York. She did her thing. And we still talk every once in a while.
Rest in peace. But no, I agree with you. You know, I mean, it's super hard to get something that is 100%, even if you build it. You know, and I think the expectation among many things, like you said, it's never going to be there.
So. Yeah. So this 80% thing, you know, I explain it like, you know, we'll see a bunch of houses together, educate yourself. And once we come across a house that gets you 80% going, like 80% of your body, yourself is like, this might be the one.
Right.
That's the one you should maybe write an offer on. I'm not telling you write an offer on this house now, but that's the one that you seriously need to consider, especially as a first-time home buyer, because it's just your first house, people. It's just your first house.
It's not forever.
It's not forever. It could be forever. It could be forever.
It could be, but chances are.
Chances are. It's usually not, because you're going to get married. You're going to do all that jazz.
Get babies. Exactly.
Kids aren't your option. You'll get dogs. You want a bigger house for your dog.
Right?
You know, we support everybody here in their decision. So 80% gets you going. Seriously, consider writing an offer.
That's a pretty interesting way to look at it, because a lot of, you know, when we talk to Sal and when we talk to first-time home buyers, they're like, and you know, they get very wishy-washy. They find a house, they're 80% there, but they start nitpicking all the issues that are wrong with it, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, it doesn't have the backyard that I want, or there's the kitchen needs a lot of work, whatever it may be. But to your point, if they're 80% there, go for it, right? Especially in this market where they're like, they're not houses falling from the sky that are perfect, right?
And it takes, it takes a good realtor to have patience with those clients too.
Yeah.
To say, let me go out of my way and show you a surplus of houses because I love my job. I love educating myself more on my product. And I'm going to feel good at the end of the day when you pick a house that you're going to write an offer on, because I'm going to know you're at that 80% or higher, and you're going to feel much more confident and happy putting an offer on this house and potentially winning it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you say that, because there are some real estate agents that are just after the, they'll just push you into anything, right? But having the right agent that actually cares about the home that you buy as being like a success story, those are the good agents, right?
Those are the people that stay in the business.
Right.
Okay, we have two types of people in this business. One for the money, two because they really care.
Yeah.
They care about their clients. They care about what they're doing. They care about building communities. They care about building people's lives and helping them through this transition of homeownership.
Right. It's enjoyable to help them find the right home at the right time for the right price.
It is so unbelievably rewarding.
And that is the beauty of our business. Just even in the mortgage side, it's like if you really care about the person, you can actually help people and make money. It's a beautiful industry to be in, right?
I tell people all the time, it's like, and honestly, so much of this doesn't even feel like work for me.
Yeah.
Because I enjoy it so much in the process of taking somebody who has an idea of what they want their life to be and then turning it into a reality. And it's just so freaking awesome to be a part of that experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, to your point, like a good agent, a professional, someone who's out there and active and seeing a lot of homes can say, or you know, wow, this is, you know, this is getting you going a little bit, but like I've seen four or five other homes in the area that will probably do it for you. You know, you're out there, you're seeing them.
So. Knowing your product. And so many realtors, unfortunately, sometimes fail at that simple thing that again, we're salespeople. I hate that, but we are salespeople.
Yeah.
To be a salesperson, you need to know your product. So.
And you also need to be able to say no. Right? Like that house is in the house for you. Like, I don't think it's good. That's a hard thing to do.
No, it's not. I am in houses all the time with clients. And after I get to know them just one time going out, I've shown them, you know, maybe 10 houses and we go to something and I read their body language and I'm just like, stop it.
Dude, let's get
out
of here.
Stop trying to force yourself to like this, to like the idea of this house. Stop worrying about me and you feel bad that you're wasting my time because we're looking at these houses. No, like, you're not going to buy this house. Let's go to the next one. Like, let me guide you. Let me help you. Let me be your leader in this transaction. So saying no is very easy for me because once they trust me, they know that I'm in their best interest. And it's empowering, actually, to say no, because then they're just like, oh, wow.
You care.
This guy cares.
He's right.
He's really looking out for me.
This isn't the house for me. I don't like it at all. I got to get out of here.
Yeah, Mac says no to a lot of people.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. You're like a no guy.
That's what they
call me. You're not the yes guy.
No, not today.
Can you talk into the mic instead of being like a mile away from it?
I can do that if you'd like.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. another thing you want to talk about, Alan, is... I mean, by the way, you go by Alan J, right? That's how people know you?
Yes. Yeah. I always introduce myself as Alan J.
Got it.
Half the people in my life say Alan. The other half say Alan J.
What about AJ?
Doesn't feel good for him. I don't think that works.
Growing up on the soccer field,
you were AJ?
AJ worked. Yes, right, it did. People, you know, very quickly, AJ! You know,
that's perfect. All right. Well, Alan J, you also want to speak to about the inspection period, which is an important period of time in the home buying process.
It is.
And people don't sometimes get that. What should or should you not try to negotiate after the contract has begun? I think that's an important topic.
This is one of my favorite topics.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
And I love talking about this with people in the business and not in the business, especially educating people on how this works. So for those of you listening out there that don't understand how this works, as soon as you go under contract, as soon as your seller accepts your offer, typically, our contract allows a 7-day inspection period. Sometimes it can go to 10. It depends on how you write it up. But usually, the standard is 7. Now, in that time, you, as a buyer, do your due diligence to see, is this really the house I should get?
Yeah.
Usually, buyers hire a licensed inspector.
Yep.
And you inspect the house thoroughly. You check out... if there's any mold, you check out the HVAC system. If it's a crawl space, you look under that. You do all the stuff that we can't see when they're in the house together.
And that's different than the appraisal. The inspection is for the client. A lot of times people don't get that, right? That's for you to make do your due diligence,
correct,
right? Yeah.
And sometimes you can actually not even do an inspection.
You can waive it.
You can waive
it. I don't suggest that, do
no,
you?
No.
Do not waive the inspection. That's like, inspection. Yeah, do not do that, dude.
No, if you're working with a realtor that suggests that, run away.
Pass. You should not do that at all.
Yeah. No, but, you know, to me personally, doing an inspection, when it comes to modifying the contract, okay, you have the option to modify it if you are dissatisfied with your inspection. So if you want to do a price adjustment, or you want to ask for something, or you want to change something, you can do that in the 7 days, or you can actually walk away. So my thing is, I only encourage as a buyer for you to modify your contract if there is a safety issue, okay?
Yeah.
Or if we discover something in the house that's going to be very
expensive,
right? Yes, like, a hefty like cost
furnace,
in the future.
Roof.
Yes and no, because as a realtor, I feel like it's my job. As soon as we get to a house, if my client's seriously interested, I'm educated enough to know, hey, this is the age of this roof.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, this is the, you know,
these are the issues that I see.
Correct. So going forward, yeah, we're not going to be able to talk about this in you know, to do an inspection amendment, you know,
right,
to change the contract.
We kind of know that the furnace is 10 years old and it might need to be replaced.
Well, 10 is kind of young, actually.
10 is young. Yeah. Let's call it 20. I mean, the thing's got a boiler, right?
Boilers can last a long time,
I know,
too.
Yeah, they're actually pretty... I mean, they don't make them like that
anymore.
It's
a tough thing, right? Just because something's old doesn't mean that it's going to break.
Like me. I'm kind of old.
Kind of.
Yeah,
compared to you.
Like Paul. So my thing is, you know, I tell people too that don't know much about a furnace or an AC unit, you know, they're like cars. Houses are like cars, you know, it's not brand new. Mm-hmm. Unless we're walking to a new construction home with new everything. But typically everyone is buying homes that are older, built in the 20s, 40s, 50s, 70s, and especially a first time home buyer. And, you know, you kind of remind them, hey, it's like a car, you know, the furnace is going to break. You're going to fix parts. You're going to clean it. You know, same thing with the AC unit.
Yep.
Eventually, if you're lucky, you know, we can have your furnace and AC unit last about 30 to 40 years. 40 is really pushing it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we come across houses all the time that, you know, furnaces and AC units are 15 years plus, and that's okay. That's because they work. And you know what? The sellers probably lived in that house, and they didn't have issues. They maintained them, and that's it. So...
That's awesome. So you basically you're saying that you know what you're getting into, but if there's something hazardous in the house, then you're going to want to make an amendment to that contract.
If it's a safety issue, yes.
Got it.
And or if it's something we didn't see.
Right. Yeah. Or a large expense that you know they have to incur very quickly, right?
If we didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
This house is sold as is. Right.
All houses are sold as is.
Right. Like you walk in, you see that the roof might need to be changed. You know that you're basically signing up for that.
Correct. And if you see the roof is a piece of crapola, okay, it's just horrible. Okay, you can't go into contract, you know, especially if it's a multiple offer situation. Okay,
yeah.
And win. Okay, and then in the inspection period, say you want a 10,000 price reduction because of the roof.
No, that's it's not going to work.
Uh-uh.
You've already negotiated.
We
that.
Saw this roof before. The listing agent's going to be like, what are you doing? The seller's going to feel insulted because you've wasted their time. You know, it's just, if you see it, have self-awareness to know what the current market
put
is.
Put it into your offer, right? Not necessarily into your after inspection thing.
It's difficult, Sal, because people are so desperate to win multiple offer situations that they'll do anything.
Yes. Today, they're like, screw it.
They'll do anything. And
we'll take care of the roof when we need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
Amen.
You know what?
Let's get a house.
As working as a buyer's agent, you have to remind your client, listen, if you ask to do this adjustment, you could lose this house, and the sellers will give it to another buyer in this multiple offer situation
right.
that won't give a flying about anything and just take it.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good point. And ultimately, the appraisal, which will validate the value, it's not going to say the roof is old and we're going to make an adjustment for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it there? Is it structurally sound? Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Very good. Thank you, Alan J.F., for those topics that are near and dear to your heart.
My pleasure.
Let's get into some headlines, and I'm going to choose Max Nathan to choose the next topic.
I think we got to talk about the data breach here.
Data breach. Big deal.
It's a big deal. People's safety.
I mean, So just so the listeners know, so Equifax, there's three reporting bureaus as far as credit goes, right? So you got Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. Yep. And Equifax got hacked. And there's like 44 million Americans that are affected. I mean, what? And just so you guys know, what they hacked were they had access to social security numbers, birth dates, addresses, driver's license numbers, credit card numbers, and other information.
Do we know who they were hacked by?
The Russians, I'm guessing. Right? Isn't that who does all this stuff?
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what they do. Well, but there's no collusion. So, guys, I mean, what do you guys think this means for our industry? Because, I mean, we deal with credit quite a bit on the mortgage side, and it's a necessary part to getting a mortgage. As a consumer, how do you feel confident now someone, you know, pulling your credit or someone not hacking into your stuff? I mean, in this day and age where everything is digital, I mean, getting hacked on a scale like this really kind of shakes your confidence in the digital age, doesn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. When I got home, this headline had sparked on the news, and my parents were like, hey, is our information okay? And it's a tough question.
They asked you, right? Because you deal with it.
Right. They know that this is something that we deal with every day. And I looked at them and was like, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure. There are 44 million people. It's tough to know if you're one of them. So it's hard to say. But, yeah, you can go back across, you know, the headlines in the past. Target, Sony, different things like that have come into play. And people need to know, one, that mortgage companies have their best interests in mind, right? 99% of the time.
Right.
So our security is their security. That's something we need to establish early in a relationship. And things like this do happen, but the less they happen, you know, the better for sure.
I mean, it's pretty crazy, though. I mean, if you're a consumer and you can't even trust the credit bureaus to not get hacked, I mean, I feel like there's going to be some backlash for sure from this. There's going to be some potentially some lawsuits. They're going to have to pay out some money. There's going to be damages. I mean, I don't even know if I'm hacked. I mean, there's a way you can search. You can go to, like, a website. You can find out if
I was hacked.
What?
I was hacked.
Like through this?
Well, it said I could be affected, right? And to Max Nathan's point, I mean, what is it? I thought it was 154 million. Is it 44 or 154?
It could be. I could have that number wrong.
It's like a significant amount of the people in the country have been hacked, right? Or potentially at risk due to Equifax's analysis or whatever. But, you know, I've been asked probably 5-6 times since it happened by current in-process clients of mine. And it's like, is this going to affect my mortgage? No.
No, it doesn't affect your mortgage.
I mean, they might not do anything with the information. They might just want to be pushing. I mean, the ultimate thing is we don't really know until the damage has actually been done. At this point, they just have the data, right? Are they going to open up 44 million credit cards? No.
They could.
They could, though.
But yeah, that information, that's a lot of sensitive information.
But I think that going forward, I mean, you know, this whole, like, do we feel safe about Equifax? I mean, they hacked the election. You know what I mean? It's like
that's not been proven yet.
Okay,
and
whatever.
Still under,
I'm just saying, you know, there is so much that I feel like with new technology and as everything progresses and everything goes on a digital record, like nothing's necessarily safe. Nothing's hack proof. So what are you gonna do? Live in fear?
Go no, you can't. And that's the point. I think that's a good point. I mean, you can't live in fear in life, right? You can do as much as you can do to protect yourself, but if something bad's gonna happen, something's bad, it's gonna happen.
I mean, if
right?
someone opens up a fake account and runs my credit up, claim fraud, and you'll 6 months later it gets cleared up. I mean, whatever, you know?
You'll deal. Now, I like what you said to your clients and, you know, with you right now, with just, you know, we're not gonna know until they do something. So carry on with your day.
Carry on.
Carry on, and then as soon as something happens, something happens, you know, well, you'll have to handle it from there. But right now, you're okay. So,
yeah.
All right. So next topic, I'll pick this one. More homeowners are saying it's a good time to sell, which is funny because there's also more homeowners that are saying this is a bad time to buy. So the gap between the people that think it's a good time to sell is way high. Good time to buy, lower, because they're just having, you know, it's a seller's market. There's no way around it. And the biggest issue that I think we're having, we talk about it almost every show, is the inventory problem, right? Yep, there's just not as many houses out there to buy.
But I think that, you know, that's a good thing, you know, if that's happening, because the supply will go up, the demand will go down. If more people are not interested in buying a home and more people are interested in selling, it opens the market up a little bit. So
Yeah, but you know, I just worry, and this is another topic. I mean, they both coincide. Is that that values are not, you know, they're rising pretty quickly because the demand is so high and the supply is so low. So it's just like anything, right?
Well, there's always a correction coming, right?
You think there's a correction? There's a correction coming? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying it might be a small correction, right? A check like, hey, you know, your
what house would cause the correction at this point, though?
This exact point. Right? Less people thinking it's a good time to buy, more people thinking it's a good time to sell, more homes hit the market. All of a sudden, there's not all these multiple offer situations. Mm-hmm. And now, hey, your home that you thought you're going to sell for 200 grand, you're going to list it at 190 and you're going to take that because that's a good price.
Alan Jay,
when is that going to happen?
Right.
I think it's just, I don't know if it's necessarily all at once. Mm-hmm. I just think that it's the market, at least locally, is cooling down a little bit. I mean, there are a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of situations still where, oh, it's multiple offer. But I do see a lot more of my clients, at least from this is a very small perspective on a large market, but, mm-hmm. you know, they're seeing more homes, they're putting more offers in, they're passing on houses, you know. I think that it's just a matter of a check and balance coming.
What was that?
Something. You like that.
Yeah, what? Stop that. Alan, what do you say to the person that says, man, I want to sell, and I know I'm going to get top dollar for my house, but I'm not going to sell until I find what I want to buy? It doesn't work that way in this market, does it?
No, it does not work
that way. No, you got to sell to buy.
Yes, you do. You have to sell. You have to take the risk of doing an extended occupancy period if you want to wait, or you need to figure out a second living arrangement with family or friends, really.
There's no other way to do it right now.
People are like, well, should I go rent something? And I'm like, no, you don't want to rent something for 6 months and waste that money, because it's not going to take you 6 months to buy something.
No.
Especially if you're extremely financially stable to do it.
Right. And I personally think unless you sell, the motivation isn't as high to buy, right? I think you need that motivation because if you're just looking at houses, perusing at houses, and, mm-hmm. and you still live in a house, you're probably not going to buy another house just because you're going to nitpick everything and you're going to say that's not. And then when you do find one, you're not going to be able to put an offer on it as quickly as you need to because everybody else wants that house.
Right. You're looking for that 100% one when Alan Jay is saying, hey, 80%.
80%.
We can't check every box. We can check 80%.
Oftentimes I get a call for someone who, they refer to me, they're ready to go. You know, we found the house that we like. We weren't really thinking about buying. I need a pre-approval. And within that half an hour time frame, well, we just called the agent. There's already an offer on it. We're not
done.
Yeah. They're gone. Crushed.
Crushed.
But, you know, like, once you get that going in your head that you want to move, I mean, those same people still, but, hey, we found another one that we really like.
Here's what's going to happen, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think once people start seeing that values peak out and they start coming down, people are like, oh, my God, I'm actually losing some equity that I had. I got to sell.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I had $100,000 in equity, and if I sold 6 months ago, I could have had $100,000. But now today, I might have $80,000, right? So.
Well, those are who are thinking about making a move. That might be their kick.
But why wouldn't you sell if you're going to make $100,000?
I mean, I guess there's a lot of different
factors that people go into it. So much stuff going on.
I know.
We forget in this business, and I forget all the time because it's like real estate for me 24/7. You guys, mortgage industry 24/7, and you're like, wait a minute, why haven't I heard from A, B, and C in the past 24 hours? that's because they have lives and kids and
kids go to school.
Jobs.
There was
and
a piano
activities.
Recital. Yeah. Who knew?
Oh, he didn't reply to my email.
Piano recital?
That's I've heard a number of times people having piano recitals. A lot of kids play piano, Paul. A lot of kids.
I mean, what are you talking about, Max?
That's the thing. Hey, you know.
Where do you live? Are you you're Silver
you
Spoon?
You know where I live.
Silver Spoon.
It's a fancy area.
Yeah. Did you go to your polo match yesterday, Max?
Yeah, we lost. It was 6-4. It was a closely contested match, but we could, you know.
Oh, Max, you're so independently wealthy. It's crazy. So, yeah, I mean, look, this is just it's a good problem to have. If it was the opposite, I don't think it'd be great, right, for our industry.
No, it's definitely, I agree with, it's a weird to say, but a good problem to have out of other problems that we have.
There's a million problems you could have. Correct. I mean, we've gone through a lot. You know, this is not a bad problem
and
to have.
Like with everything, you know, we could speculate all day what the market's going to do. We have to live in today, right? Here's what it is. We got to make it happen either way. And if tomorrow your price of your home goes up or goes down, How are we to know?
Yeah.
Do you want to sell it or do you not? Mm-hmm. Do you want to move? Do you want to buy a house or no?
Mm-hmm. Right. Make it happen. So just last topic, and we got to fire through this real quick. I mean, obviously, prices are sky high. Mortgages are still cheap. The good news is, I mean, yeah, values are keep going up, and it's getting more expensive to buy a house. But what's keeping the market going on some level is that interest rates are like really around averaging on a 30-year around 4.25%, 4%, 3.8%, kind of bouncing around. But the reality is the price of money is still very cheap. It's very affordable to buy a house based on that. Mm-hmm. You know, if I think if rates were, you know, I don't think small movements in interest rate make a big deal in the market. Like if it went to 4.5, who cares? It went to 4.7, who cares? It goes to 6. Now we start talking about there's a much bigger increase in payment, right, Max?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it.
I mean, you could afford it, but I mean, other people couldn't, right?
Not everybody.
Yeah.
So it's good to have.
Polo, but. Recitals.
Lots of dance class.
But then you remind people that the market is a wave, and eventually if they purchase now with a 6% interest rate later in life, that they can refinance, and that brings them, makes them feel better, you know, instead of kicking themselves in the face. Ah, if I would have bought 2 years ago.
You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't kick yourself in the face.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough. But sometimes people do, and they're like, oh, if I would have bought in 2 years ago and had that 3.3%, you know.
But you didn't.
Yeah. But.
Right.
It's okay to buy now because this is how the market works, okay? And I can't guarantee you 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, at some point we will come back down and then you can refinance.
And I think that's, you know, an important part of working with someone who just doesn't work for like a conglomerate, right? Like, hey.
David Hall, everybody. Hey. How's it going?
Popping his head.
How'd Max Nathan get on the show?
I don't know. He's That's talking awesome. About how rich he is. It's been his polo,
it's
dance recitals.
Clearly some exclusive abilities that
he paid his way into it, I think.
Max Nathan's a smooth talker.
Yeah, he sounds great. Talk. Yeah, it's surprising. I didn't expect it.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah, thanks, David. What a waste of time.
yeah, I don't even know what I was saying.
Yeah,
but, no, but I think what Sal was saying was really important about just like living in the day, right? So today, this is where rates are at. Tomorrow, 6 months from now, who knows?
Working with someone who
is competent
is like your mortgage person for life or your realtor for life. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, if rates go down 0.25%, 0.5%, 0.5%, I'm going to be calling you, you know, because I want to do your mortgages for life.
Mm-hmm. Do your mortgage for life. Guys, great show.
Thank you very
Alan
much
Jay.
For having me. Thank you.
Thank you. So tell people how to get a hold of you, Alan. What's the best way?
You know what? My domain is theredrealtor.com if you want to check out my website. My cell phone number, direct line, 734-377-4036. I take text and calls.
Text and calls. Max.
The millennial way.
I text a lot. I'm not a millennial. Max. Max, how are you? Thank you so much for being on the show.
This was fantastic. Appreciate you guys.
You did a great job. Salvatore, I love you.
Love you too, Paul.
I mean, this is a good song.
Oh, I love it. I love it.